For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. He does not make money off the site, but he does need money in order to run the site. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
Good evening, ladies. Okay, so first and foremost, I do expect, I think, this is going to be probably a last meeting of this season, in the sense that I think we're probably going to get through the section on cooking, some of the main topics really that we've all been looking forward to, I think, since the very beginning. We're going to be able to touch on tonight. We've been doing Bishul now for several weeks. And then next week is the day before Shavuos, like 48 hours before Shavuos. And then the following week is the class that I'm giving on Sara Imenu. It's hosted by the Sisterhood, and whatever proceeds come in are benefiting to me and my high school. So I did send out an email last night, whatever it was, reiterating my request that if everyone could help me PR this event, I very much appreciate that. I hope this becomes a regular, whether the Tamima High School aspect aside, but I hope this becomes and I'm a firm believer, as I've said many times, that there needs to be more and more adult education specifically for women. Adult education, high school, I mean, all across the board. I think it's an important, a growing area, thank God, of the Jewish world, but needs to continue. So I hope this becomes a large event. Please bring friends, family, people that don't necessarily, frequent Ariel are certainly welcome. So if everyone can help me with that, I would very much appreciate that. I do have some flyers I thought I would pass around. The ones that are out on Shabbos. I sent the Elsa's attachment. But just to... And my goal is each year, next year will be in Yerushalayim, of course, but each year to focus on a different personality and the lessons that we can learn, a personality sketch, a character sketch, if you will, of that person, and just to understand that person and the lessons that we can learn. Because it is fascinating, when you learn Chumash, it's one thing. You fly through the parashiyos, and you get the storyline, but I think looking at the personality that Shar was, I think will give us a very different. I'm already seeing different perspective preparing. It's a whole different thing. So I appreciate that effort very much. Okay, so we were in the middle of the final section. Really, we're talking about cooking on Shabbos. We went through all the preparatory steps, the different vessels, the show and tell that we did, and all that stuff. So we're in the third and final section, which is the different practical examples of what you and I would do in a kitchen on Shabbos. So the first one, Roman number one of section three, was leaving a food on fire before Shabbos. The classic example is a cholent. And we talked about different issues. We talked about the issue, double A, lowercase a, was you shouldn't do anything that looks like cooking, or may come to cooking, rather. I meant to say, sorry, might come to cooking, and lowercase b is really the same thing, just with the malacha of kindling in mind. Did you ever get the packet? No. With the malacha of kindling in mind. So the point was both... is that right?
That is the same
no.
thing.
No. Sorry, that's the wrong one. No, that would be bad.
Oh, it's the one with the pot on the front.
Yes. Graphics, sorry. So both of these ladies you recall are basically the same. We're concerned that a person shouldn't forget themselves on Shabbos and play with the fire, which will lead to both cooking and to kindling. Again, the two totally separate malachos, but they can be violated at the same instant. So because of that concern, Chazal, the rabbis, instituted two different solutions. Solution one and solution two is basically where we got to last time. The first one is what's known as the blech, which in biblical times, really until recently, was doing something physical to the fire itself, to the ashes of the fire, either covering them with dirt or raking them out. That was a classic example back in the day. With our more modern appliances, the more modern approach is either to cover the fire, the heat itself, which would be the gas or the electric, or covering the knobs or both. There's certainly Jews who will do both. So again, it's either knobs. This is all in solution one, by the way. It's either the covering the heat source, covering the knobs, or doing both. And my Rebbeim certainly held, and Rabbi Kushkerman also tells people that the main thing these days would be the knobs. If you want to do both, you're certainly welcome to do that, and that satisfies all the modern day post-game opinion. But the main of the two is to cover the knobs, for obvious reasons, because the knob is where, if one is going to violate cooking, or one is going to violate kindling, that's where it's going to happen. I mean, you have to understand that the reality has just changed. Back in the day, it was the fire source itself was where you could be tempted to stoke or to do something with it. And therefore, it was the fire source itself that the rabbis decreed should be dealt with. Again, by covering it, by moving it. Today, there's no such thing. You can't stoke the gas. You can't stoke the burner, in whatever form it comes today. It's specifically the control panel, the knobs, whatever.
But if it's Shabbos and you know you're not supposed to touch it, isn't that, you may forget?
Correct. For concern, you're going to forget yourself. And you see your shalom going down the drain and 25 guests coming for lunch, and you get nervous. So you may be tempted, our concern is you may be tempted to play with the heat. We're not concerned you're tempted to plug it in or unplug it, that type of thing is not a concern.
Okay.
But we are concerned you're going to forget yourself. I mean, realize this is similar in a certain sense, the comparison is a decent one, to chometz on Pesach. We're much, much stricter about chametz, about a piece of bread on Pesach, than we are about pig. Because you can never eat pig. There's just no way, Jose. You're not going to get anywhere near it. Whereas a roll was perfectly fine, a mitzvah to eat yesterday, and now it's totally forbidden to eat. It's worse than eating pig. So we're much, much stricter with the rules of chametz on Pesach than we are with lobster. So to here, this is something that we engage in 6 days of the week, and therefore we want to be particularly careful. On Shabbos, a whole bunch of rules, as we've seen time and time again, the rabbis put up a lot of fences around Shabbos because it's a normally permissible activity, and now it's not. So that line is, and I think, you know, if we're honest with ourselves, we've all been there. We've all goofed. I certainly have.
See, I think that if your shalom's going down the tubes,
yeah,
and it's Shabbos, whether you can turn it down,
Yeah, let's say it's burning. You might be tempted to, in our world, that would be a more common case. Be tempted to turn it down.
Well, if it's burning, it's burning. I mean, it's childish. You can't do anything about it.
True, but
well, most crock pots have the pot that you can take out, so you just take it out and whatever's done is done.
Yeah, but if it's 8 o'clock in the morning, you come downstairs and you realize,
but
oh my gosh,
have it out than have it burn.
True. But again, our concern is that without thinking, you're going to adjust the fire.
As a strange question.
No questions.
Okay, you got a gas stove. Okay,
yeah.
You put it on the lowest flame that it could possibly be on. On Shabbos, can you put a pot on there before Shabbos starts, but you've covered the dial?
Mm-hmm.
You could?
As long as we have to, the fire, the food can be there before Shabbos as long as the dials are cooked.
It has to stay there, but you need to cover the
dial.
The dial so that you
don't adjust.
You take it off and use the water.
Use the water, you mean? You're talking about if it's a kettle or something, water's in that pot? You can remove it from the fire. Yes, that's really what we're talking about here. Leaving food on the fire from before Shabbos and then removing it, like a challenge. The requirement would be, it has to be there, of course, before Shabbos, and then you have to make sure you can't access the controls. And then Shabbos night, Shabbos day, whatever it is, you simply remove it.
But you can't put it
putting
back.
It back is the next section we'll talk about.
There's
additional rules.
To cover it.
What's
well,
that?
Well, you can put a bluff over the fire, but if you've got a pot of water, boil like a teapot full of water.
Right.
On a low flame and it's keeping it hot.
Right.
Once you take that off of there, you can't put it back.
Right.
Okay, well, there are rules.
You put a bluff on it. Like you could put like a cookie sheet or something.
On what?
On the fire.
No, the fire already has the fire. Once you remove, it doesn't matter if you've covered the fire or not, once you remove what you're heating, you can't put that.
Not so quick. If you're going to leave something, to address your cookie sheet question, if you're going to leave something on the fire before Shabbos, there has to be, again, either the controls are covered or the fire is covered like the cookie sheet, or both. Well, that's Roman numeral number one here. We'll talk about Roman numeral number two, which is what you're touching on now, and that is, can you put it back? There's certainly a long list of additional rules that have to be considered. But in the simplest case, which is, it's there Friday afternoon, you're going to, look at our classic, you know, your typical challenge. You put it up Friday afternoon, you remove it Shabbos day, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and that's it. You're not planning on putting it back, it's over. In that situation, the only thing you really need to do is ensure that before Shabbos, those knobs are covered, and or the heat source itself is covered. Really, one or the other, again, would suffice. The better of the two would be the knobs. Okay, so that's a relatively simple application. It gets much more complicated in the next piece. Okay, so solution number two, ladies, is to put it up before Shabbos and make sure that it's half cooked before Shabbos. If this chicken takes an hour to cook, it needs to be in there at least half an hour before you light candles. If you do that, it's half cooked. The assumption then of the rabbis is you're no longer tempted to play with the fire. It's already well on its way, and you feel fairly confident that it's going to get where it needs to go. It's going to be fully cooked before you need it for the Friday night meal, and therefore you really don't, strictly speaking, you don't need to cover the dials. You don't need to cover the fire source. Strictly speaking, it's one or two.
Okay.
Because we're concerned again about you being tempted to adjust the fire. So it's interesting, going back to what you said before, Mrs. Crone, where the real concern of the rabbis was, I'd have to look more into the sources, but I believe the real concern was it's not going to get fully cooked, as opposed to, it seems we're less worried about burning, probably because of what you said before, Laura, that if it's burning, it'll just take it off.
Is burning food kosher?
Is say again?
Burning food.
Burn, yeah. I mean, there's no kosher issue. Yeah, it may not be, exactly, I was going to say, may not want to eat it. But there's no kosher problem. There might be, you know, I think we're learning today there might be a health issue. But
when you say put up the half cooked, when does it get cooked the other half?
If you're lighting candles at 7, let's say. No, you can leave the oven on. But let's say you're lighting candles at 7. Let's just say Shabbos starts at 7 without getting into lighting candles versus sunset and all that other complicated. Let's just say Shabbos starts at 7. And your chicken takes an hour to cook at 400, let's say. Just assume you're going to leave it on, or you have a timer that's going to shut the oven off. That's a separate. So as long as your chicken is in at 6:30, so you know it's going to be halfway through its cooking process when Shabbos hits, and you light candles, that's fine. And then you just leave the oven on, and either stays on the whole Shabbos or goes off later. That's a separate.
The oven can stay on Shabbos.
Yeah.
As long as you're not using it to...
The food's in there cooking.
Right.
Yes.
But once you take it out, you can't put it back in.
Yeah, we'll talk about that also. But you can certainly remove it from the oven, yes. Absolutely.
What about to warm the bread?
Warming bread? I mean, you can't... We'll talk about putting things in an oven shortly. You can't put anything in an oven on Shabbos. Mm-hmm. Period.
That's
can't
off.
Do it.
What if the oven's not on?
Unless it's off. Yes.
What if
the light issues are taken care of, right? Either tape down or bowl removed or whatever.
Store things in there.
Yeah, the dirty dust. Whatever hides the dirty dishes.
Or like they don't have enough counter space to have all their food out. So
right.
They have it in there
to hide the cake or whatever.
Yeah.
Right.
Until they're ready.
Just remember to take it out. I've melted. I think once melted a pot handle for
this.
Yeah.
So. Excuse me, you cook your dinner and you turn off the oven before Shabbos.
Yeah.
Okay. But you're not going to eat for like another hour. But you want warm challah. And the oven stays warm even when you've turned it off.
Mm-hmm.
At least mine does. Can you put the... It's not on. It's just warm.
Right.
The light situation has been taken care of. Can
right.
you put your challahs in there to warm them for Shabbos?
Good question. Let's hold on to that until we get a little further.
Okay.
That's a great question. Okay, so again, the first one, Roman numeral number one, I want to keep it simple so we move to the next one, which is, you're putting it on Friday afternoon, you're removing it Shabbos day. The only requirement there would be to make sure that you deal with the blech issue again. Either the heat source is covered or the knobs are covered or both. And that's solution number one. Solution number two would be it's going to be half cooked before Shabbos. There is certainly a stringency that is mentioned in Poskim, to do both. To have both half-cooked and also the knobs. It's certainly not required, but it's certainly a stringency that is mentioned. I think they're in the house.
So, like a challenge? You can't put it up a half hour before Shabbos.
You could. You're saying because the challenge will take much, much longer than that to cook. Okay, so then there is, yes, thank you for asking that. There is another leniency, which I really don't have a spot on here for per se, but that is something the exact opposite. Right now we're talking about, solution number two was, if it's halfway on its way, the Chazal assumes you're not going to play with it because it's already well on its way. Well, the opposite is also true. If this is, in the Gemara's language, if it's raw meat, and there's no way in the world it's going to be ready for that nighttime meal, and it will be ready with plenty of time for the next meal. It'll take 6 hours, you know, slow cooker, let's say, with meat in it, 6 hours, 8 hours, whatever it is on low. So you can't eat that challenge Friday night.
Right.
No way, you know, even if you turn it to high, it's just not going to make it. So there also, you don't have to cover that solution suffices. If the food, it's exact opposite of what we said before.
Right.
If you're not going to be tempted to play with it because no matter what you do, it's not going to work, it's not going to help,
then
we're not worried you're going to take the shell and put it in the oven. That we're not concerned. We're concerned you're going to play with the situation as is. So again, if you put the shell up at 6:30 and you're planning on eating at 8, and there's no way that slow cooker is going to be ready for 8, which is the truth, certainly if it's meat, all bets are off also. You need not worry about anything. And that's a big leniency with shell pots. So in that situation, the letter of the law would say you don't need to cover the knobs, you don't need to cover anything. Now again, the custom is, and I did verify this a few weeks ago, Rabbi Kushkumani, what he tells folks all the time is, just cover the knobs. Just as a matter, you know, it's
what
stringency, it's good policy, as we talked about before, cover it, either tape or foil or something. Whatever the control panel is, it's buttons or electronic, you know, whatever it is, mechanical or not, one should cover it to make sure that it's not played with.
we
definitely did.
Okay, so what if you put your challenge up early on Friday?
Right. Yeah. Friday morning?
Yeah.
Same question.
So you put your challenge up early on Friday morning, and Friday afternoon before Shabbos, you decide you want to eat some of the challenge.
Yeah.
So you eat some of the challenge. And then you close the challenge, and then you let it keep cooking until Saturday, and then you do the whole thing again. That's okay?
Yeah, that would be fully cooked. It's fully cooked by Shabbos starts, and therefore, certainly anything more than half cooked, you've done what you need to do. Again, the letter of the law.
It's okay to eat it Friday and then also eat it on Saturday.
Sure, yes. Now again, you're talking about removing it from the crock pot Friday afternoon before Shabbos starts, and simply putting it back.
Eating it out of the crock pot.
As long as Shabbos hasn't started, that's fine. There's no Shabbos rules. Yeah.
Well, that's sort of my question. I was wondering if you put it up early on Friday at 1 or whatever, and then you want it as a soup.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's been cooking for a while.
Right.
It's a good soup.
If it's got liquid.
And you take some out.
Friday afternoon or Shabbos?
Does it matter if you take stuff out Friday before Shabbos starts?
Yeah, if you take it out before Shabbos starts, then
you're all right.
There's no rules, there's no regs.
Then it won't be hot.
You're going to want to put it back, certainly, yes. I mean,
turn it off.
If you're supposed to have a Shabbos lunch, you know, you're going to want to put it back, obviously. As long as you put it back, it's a fully cooked.
So
fully cooked crock pot, you're putting it back. There's really no issue. Yes, ma'am.
Even if it was during Shabbos,
mm-hmm.
If you took the crock pot out and served, but you didn't take your hand off.
Okay, we're getting there. We're getting there. Yes, very good. Okay, so what you're getting at is whether or not you can put it back. We're gonna. That's a very good point. Okay, so let's move on. I mean, everyone's, you know, grabbing at this, so let's go for it. The next one, ladies, is returning food. The Roman numeral number two, returning food to the fire on Shabbos. So the example is Friday night challenge, which in yeshivas is not an uncommon thing. Boys have the suda, especially in the winter. The suda is at 5 o'clock or 5:30 or whatever it is, the main meal, 6 o'clock. And then they'll go off to their Rebbe's house, or they'll go off to learn, they'll go off to whatever. And by 10:30, they're hungry. Haven't eaten in 3 hours, and they're 15, you know, it's not an uncommon thing. So can you then take the crock pot, take the challenge off the fire enjoy some of it and put it back. That's the question that we're just touching on right now. Okay, so number one is stirring and scooping. One should not stir food, even fully cooked. Even fully cooked. One should not stir food while it is in a pot on the fire. Even though it's fully cooked, and even though you and I know the rule already that once something is cooked, it's cooked. You really can't do anything to it to make it more cooked.
Yeah.
But this is an unusual stringency that we... What's that? No, it's according to that opinion that we seem to really be concerned about, he somehow holds that is cooking.
Really?
It's beyond many commentaries to explain how that's true. Certainly if it's half-cooked, we all understand, a half-cooked soup or chow or whatever, and you stir, distributes the heat and allows things to cook faster. That makes a lot of sense. But if something is fully cooked, it would seem to, you know, to us who we know the basic halacha already, once it's cooked, it's cooked. He holds, once that approach says, if it's on the fire and you're stirring it, that's called cooking.
Wow.
Not even looks like cooking, that is cooking.
Wow.
And therefore, despite the fact that many commentaries struggle with why should that be, we do take him seriously. So, we don't stir anything while it's on the fire. Cooked, not cooked, we don't care. You don't stir things on the fire. Now, if you need to scoop out, let's say, for example, my wife and I were first married. I think I mentioned we bought this tiny little crock pot. It was on sale for $10, whatever it was. And only to realize after we brought it home, you can't remove the insert. It wasn't an insert and a burnt and a thing. It was one piece. I don't know what they're thinking. But aside from the halakhic, you know, how do you clean the thing? But be that as it may, that's what it was. So that you couldn't stir before you served it, but you could certainly gently scoop out of. Because it's a kli rishon, it's the first vessel, still on the fire, you can't unplug it, and there's no requirement to have it on a timer. You're allowed to scoop out of that if necessary. But the normative best practices is to remove the kli rishon from the fire first. Which again, in our crock pots is not an issue. You take that's what we all do anyway. You take the crock pot, I shouldn't say that, but that's what you should do on Shabbos certainly. You take the pot out of the element and you put it down somewhere safe. That's
as
the beginning.
Stir it.
And then you can stir it. Yes, once it's removed from the fire, you're allowed to stir it.
I put it back.
So now we're talking about putting it back. But the first step again is taking it, serving it. I want to just get that out of the way. Serving it, you're allowed to serve from the kli rishon on the fire if there's no choice. But you cannot stir in the kli rishon on the fire, and you shouldn't even serve it. Shouldn't even scoop it from the kli rishon on the fire if you have a choice. If you have a choice, again, best practices, which, for all intents and purposes, every crockpot that I've seen since then is removable. You take it out, you move it, and then you can stir it, and then you can scoop, no problem. Okay, now, getting to what everyone's asking.
Just one about this cooking situation.
Yeah.
Someone once told me...
The famous someone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The famous someone. That if you have chowan and or soup and it's hot, that you can't add salt to it for your taste, because if you put the salt in, it's going to be cooking in the heat of the food.
We did touch on this last time, I believe it was. Salt is not a problem because salt, unless it's some kind of salt I'm not aware of, but salt generally is cooked.
But salt makes the thing boil faster.
That's a good point. It lowers the boiling temperature.
It's a great stress needed of heat.
Yeah, maybe on the fire you're talking about. On the fire, I would not do that. So that, yeah, that's.
But
good.
In your plate, you can.
On the fire for a variety of reasons. But on the plate, there's no reason. There's an issue with some people avoid putting salt on beans.
On the plate, on the.
That's certainly a stringency. Some people avoid putting it on beans in a challenge, which is a totally separate malacha. Some hold as ma'abed. It's akin to tanning because the salt will change out of the texture or the color. Or I'm not sure exactly, but I don't think that's a typical stringency that folks around here worry about. But be that as it may, as far as cooking goes, there's no problem with salt.
In the plate, we can do that. We can do that because we put salt in the bread.
So the five necessary solutions, ladies, to allow returning food to the fire. So again, our situation here is a little more complex. The second example here, returning food to the fire, is You put it up Friday afternoon like you're supposed to. It's blecht, which means, in our case, you cover the knobs. And now it's ready, 11 o'clock Friday night. You want to have some challenge. But you want to put it back on the fire so that it's also good Shabbos day. It's a big challenge, plenty of food. And now you want to have it warm for Shabbos lunch. So there's five issues that need to be addressed. And let's go through the issues first, you know, top to bottom, and then we'll go back and elaborate on all the solutions. Issue A, capital A, is cooking. We have to make sure that their cooking is not going on. Because here, ladies, you're not just removing, you're replacing. So the first and most important issue to address is going to be, and again, we're going to skip the solutions, we'll go through all the issues first. The first issue to address is to make sure you're not cooking. That has to be foremost in our mind.
Okay, and if you're not cooking, that means it's already been, it's on long enough that it's been cooked?
So we'll get to what needs to, you're already getting to the solution. I just want to get to the, right now I want to focus on our worries and anxieties here. And then we'll get to the
cooking.
Cooking, it doesn't mean it's cooked.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not. It may not be fully cooked.
Okay.
The next one issue. Yes, and add in there also, please, lowercase AA, just to make my coding system here as confusing as possible. It's really the same, one and the same almost. If you recall, A, lowercase double A, and lowercase B are both the same thing almost,
okay.
Which is we're concerned you come to cook. We're concerned you come to kindle. So that's really issue. Where it says B, you can just put a slash and add in AA. It's a rabbinic concern that we shouldn't come to cook. That's Malacha 11, and you shouldn't come to kindle Malacha 38.
It's a rabbinic
concern, rabbinic rule that you shouldn't come to cook, and you shouldn't come to kindle a fire. No, we're going
to
skip the solutions. Right now, we're just going to focus on issues. We Jews have a lot of issues. So yeah, so again, issue B should be expanded out, and that was right in. It's not just B, but it's also AA. You put a little slash there, or and sign, or whatever.
Kindle
it's lowercase
day.
B and
kindle
AA.
Day.
Kindle the fire. Remember, the concern before is you're going to turn up the fire. Turning up the fire will mean you're violating kindling, and you're violating cooking, potentially. So the rabbis were concerned, we'd make sure that this situation doesn't lead to that actual violation.
Do not kindle and do not
cook. Yeah.
So that basically means don't turn the fire up and don't stir it. Or don't.
Yeah, well, we'll see. So that's the next one. The next one, ladies, issue C, if you recall, we renamed C AAA. C is now AAA, lowercase AAA.
I didn't know that was the rules of outlining. Okay.
And that is it. We don't want this to look like cooking. We don't want it to look like cooking. So if you recall, that's a similar to going into McDonald's. Go to McDonald's, it looks like you're getting a cheeseburger, which will either allow people to think that's okay, or allow people to think you're doing something wrong. Either one is not what we want.
Why is it okay to go to... what do you call it? A Quick Trip, but not okay.
Good question. Hold that question to the end. That's an excellent question. We'll touch on that.
It's an excellent question and one I've wondered.
Yes, I think we touched on that before, but we can certainly revisit that. Please remind me of that great question. But let's just stay focused here. So issue, again, AAA, ladies, is you shouldn't do anything that looks like cooking.
Right.
Looks like cooking.
Put up blinds.
Okay. Now let's go back up to the five necessary solutions and go through each of the solutions. So again, the first one, the issue capital A, was cooking itself. The solution number one is obvious, I think, and that is it has to be fully cooked. If you're going to take something off and expect to put it back, it has to be 100% cooked before you attempt this maneuver. Because if it's, you know, 70% cooked, then you're willing to eat it, you know, pretty rare, let's say, but then you're going to take it, like some of the potatoes are really hard. Some of those potatoes are still really hard. They're really not what most people would call edible. And of course, you get into gray areas, what's edible, what's not edible. But let's just assume that this is not fully cooked, but you're willing to eat it. And then you take it off and put it back. Well, putting it back is a violation of cooking. The real McCoy. The real deal. You're now taking a not cooked food and putting it on a fire to get it cooked. That's Bishul Min HaTorah. That's a biblical violation of Bishul. And therefore, the first solution is, first question you must ask yourself, the first solution of these five is this food, is this chalent, in our case, fully cooked? If it's not, don't touch.
Let's say you made something like a meatloaf.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And for all intents and purposes, it had been in the oven for quite a while, and you assumed it was cooked.
Right.
And you were going to serve it on Shabbos day, so you took it out, you know, put it in the fridge, whatever. And it's in this loaf pan.
Right.
And you put it on the blech to warm it.
Okay.
Shabbos morning.
Okay, assuming you can do that, we'll talk about that next step. But yeah, go ahead.
And it, you were, because it was in the oven so long, you assumed it was cooked.
Turns out it wasn't fully cooked.
Well, either that or
you'll die.
It cooked more than you didn't.
Okay, so it's fully, if it's fully cooked according to the norms of your society, of our culture, if something's considered fully cooked,
right,
and then it just gets
it.
More cooked, well, the challah does.
Okay, okay.
I mean, Rabbi Berman, for example, put out a challah that wasn't eaten Shabbos morning, he put up a challah shittus.
Okay.
And it was really, really, really well cooked, but that's fine. At 1 o'clock is fully cooked, or 9 o'clock in the morning, you know, probably 3 o'clock in the morning, it's fully cooked. If it continues getting more cooked, which for some maybe is a good thing, that's fine. That's not that's not an issue. If it's not fully cooked somehow, that's a problem.
But I mean, if you assumed it was cooked and you would have eaten it Friday night anyway,
right?
But you decide to have it Shabbos morning.
Yeah, cooking it more, so to speak, is not an issue.
Okay.
As long as everyone around here, whatever that means, would say, yeah, this is fully cooked, it's ready.
So with the challah on Shabbos, it was fully cooked at noon.
Yeah, I'm sure. You put it up Friday afternoon.
There weren't enough people to eat it.
He didn't have a group of eaters, right.
But did people eat from it?
No. He just took it off. He didn't take it out, no. He took it out of Shalosh Shittis, I mean, at 7:30, 8 o'clock, and we ate at Shalosh Shittis. Half challah, it was great.
But nobody ate, no one touched it at lunchtime.
No. That would be this Roman numeral number 2. If we took it out at 11:30 for the kids and then put it back, since there was so much left over, that would be this issue here.
There were no kids here that day.
Whatever.
Yeah, two come who weren't supposed to be here. Did you hear about that?
That came for Bas Mitzvah.
Yeah, Bar Mitzvah.
Right. Okay. So that's solution number one, ladies, is the food is fully cooked.
Okay.
So again, if it's not fully cooked, this you can take it off, but you cannot put it back.
On.
Cannot put it back. Okay. Now, solution number two, we've already discussed, and that is the knobs, and in this case, and the fire, need to be covered before Shabbos. Here, where you're returning it to the fire, we are stricter. And we say both the knobs and the heat source itself should be covered. So, practically what that means for our crock pots is the element is lined with foil, let's say, and the knobs are removed or taped or something, foiled, before Shabbos. Both things need to be done.
You have to line the thing and then put the pot in it?
Yeah.
What about the rock?
Why?
Because the original decree was to cover the heat source. And even though it's you and me, that doesn't make a lot of sense. But if you're actually putting the food back, you got to do what the original decree was, which is to cover the heat source. This became
tin foil is covering the heat source.
Yeah.
It comes through the tin foil.
Yeah, the goal is not really necessarily to minimize the heat, which it might, I'm not sure if it does or not. But the main goal here is to serve as a post-it note. It's to serve as a rabbinically designed post-it note to ensure that you don't play with it. So, again, for us, none of us stoked the element. There's no such thing. But that was the original decree, and therefore, if you're returning, if you're doing the more strict version of this, again, just leaving, Roman numeral number one was simply leaving and then removing, that's a lower level concern. But if you're actually removing and returning, that's a higher level of concern. There, in modern day authorities say, you got to do both the practical, which is covering the knobs, and the ancient decree, which is covering the heat. You got to do both.
Where does the pebble that goes at the bottom of the cross pot come in?
Good question.
The pebble on the cross pot.
There was a lot of discussion about that, I don't know, 15 years ago. We'll have to get to that with Hadmana, with the next piece. The short answer is most people don't worry about it.
Okay.
Yeah.
But what is it?
What is it?
When we get to Hadmana, I'll try and explain it. But
okay.
It's a whole separate. Okay, let's move on because I don't want to run out of time before we get to the bottom. So that's solution number two, ladies, is the knobs and the fire. If you're planning on returning, then the knobs and the fire must be covered. Now, looking like cooking. What this means is, and that, the second line there, you can write this down as well, we need to make it clear that what we're doing is continuing what we started on Friday. The rabbis did not want this to look like a new initiation of cooking on Shabbos. I mean, that's the classic case of looking like cooking. You take a cocoa out of the fridge, and you stick it in the oven. You can't do that. Even if the oven's on, and the lights are taken care of, and the cocoa's fully cooked, you can't do that. The only reason is because it looks like cooking. And we've established before, you can't do anything on Shabbos which looks like cooking.
Like
and therefore,
cutting,
if you...
Cilantro.
Cutting would be fine, but if you...
And put it...
Putting anything whole or in pieces onto a heat source on Shabbos, and like from cold, is a problem of it looks like you're doing an act of cooking.
So that's a blech, is the same thing.
Exactly. So you can't do that on Shabbos. You can't put anything on a blech on Shabbos unless you follow these rules. And we'll get to inverted pans and all that stuff, the question you asked before. But simply said, you can't do anything on Shabbos which looks like cooking. So again, taking the kugel out of the fridge and heating it up then on Shabbos, putting it on a heat source initially on Shabbos is out. How do we ensure that what you're doing doesn't look like initiating, but it looks like you're only continuing what you started permissibly on Friday? So there's three parts to that answer. Solution three is the food still must be warm. The challah that you take off Friday night has to be warm when you put it back Friday night. If it's totally cooled, you're out of luck. Because you've already ended, so to speak, the initial warming. The cooking process that started Friday is considered over once it's room temperature. You're starting it over. Exactly. You're starting from scratch, so to speak.
So it has to be warmer than room temperature?
Yes. Yes. Which we'll see is not that big of a concern because of number four, or five really. Solution number four is you have to intend to return it to the fire. There has to be an intention when you take it off that I'm going to put this back. You don't have to start davening and shuckling and, you know, all that, incantations and all that stuff. You just have to simply have, your simple mindset is, I'm going to put this back on Shabbos. The thinking there is...
What is this? When you mean this?
When you take the shalon off of the heat source Friday night, the food, whatever the food is, you have to intend to be putting it back 10 minutes later, 2 minutes later, half an hour later, whatever it is. Again, that's just simply your mindset. That's part of the rabbi's institution of a continuation from before. This is a mental continuation. The next day is not going to work. If anything, for the first reason, and first and third and fifth, it has to be warm. That's not going to... So yes, intention goes forever, but the other guys don't. And the fifth, and most obvious, I would argue, is your hand has to be on the pot. You have to hold on to the pot the whole time.
Okay.
Doesn't mean two hands, it means one hand. And if you need two people, you can certainly use, you know,
so
get
you
a team.
Sit there and heat your food while you're holding onto the pot.
No, I suspect not. But if you take the challah pot off of the fire, you want to have, again, you've got, like, I was in yeshiva, the challah pots were just humongous. So you take it out, you hold on to it, you can scoop into a serving bowl, let's say, with the other hand, or get one of the other guys to do it or whatever, and then you put it back in. That, if you think about it, is the single most obvious and most powerful way of showing yourself and the rest of the world that this is not a brand new thing. This is only continuing what I did before. Is I'm still holding it. I'm still part. I took it out. My hand's still there. I'm putting it back. It's not a brand new, you know, I'm taking it out of the fridge. It's been there unheld for hours, and now I'm putting it into the oven. I'm simply continuing. It's just, you know, out and in.
You have to put it there.
Okay, so the leniencies of the next point, ladies, is the leniencies of solution 4 and 5 are, and we shouldn't abuse these, but the leniencies nonetheless, and that is if one does not have 4 or 5 in place, they're still allowed to put it back.
What?
The leniencies of solutions 4 and 5. Again, solution number 4 was intention to return it.
Okay.
You didn't decide after it's out. And number 5, the most powerful of them all, is your hand is still in the pot. If you goofed and let go,
okay,
you're still allowed to return it to the heat source.
Okay.
Let me be clear though, solutions, requirements, I'm calling them solutions, 1, 2, and 3 are not forgivable. They're not waivable. They must be fully cooked. It must be knob covered, heat covered. And number three, it still must be warm. If any of those three things are not present, all bets are off. You're out of luck. If solution four and five certainly should be followed, and that's a halacha, that's required. But if you goof, so for example, the most common case would be you take the chalent off, thinking you're going to finish it. It's not that big of a chalent. There's plenty of people to eat it. You got another chalent, let's say for Shabbos lunch. So I don't need to return this. And then after having it off for 3 minutes, you realize, gosh, we're only going through half this chalent. It would be a shame to have to throw it out. You are then allowed, because you have number one fully cooked, you have number two, it's covered, you have number three, it's still hot, it's only 5 minutes later, you didn't have four, you didn't have five, you are allowed to return it to the heat source. But again, only four and five, and it's dangerous, because we can sometimes forget which one's four and which one's five. But, and this is one of the projects I never got to in school in Tamima, was to have a magnet of lists of these types of things. You know, some things malachas are pretty clear, and but lists like this can very often get blurry in our mind. But suffice it to say, we should know this list if you're going to attempt this maneuver. And four and five should be there, but can be waived. Okay. Yes, ma'am.
Wendy brought up something which she's mentioned, but it doesn't seem that we've been talking about it. Okay. You take the lid off the chalent.
Mm-hmm. That doesn't count. I mean, there's no import to the lid.
You can put it
question
anywhere.
I'm sorry, I didn't answer it before.
You
for
can
the
put
lid,
it anywhere. And you
but
can
if
take,
the water yeah. condensation on the lid gets cold.
That's a great question. You should shake it off.
Stop thinking of these things.
That's covered.
That's great. You should... you should... if it's really, really wet, then putting it back to prom. Because what you're basically doing, what you're pointing out, is you're reheating a cooked liquid.
Liquid,
which
yeah.
is a no-no. So you should shake it off. It doesn't have to be dry, though. It doesn't have to be dry.
Okay, so
you guys can have this out at recess.
No, the top gets yeah. marked, period. What we're
correct.
Always talking about is
yes.
the lining that has...
Yes, that was Wendy's question. The holding of the cover is irrelevant. It's the holding of the pot.
No, what she said is that, okay, it's warm... And we have the intention to put it back.
Right.
And I have here.
Your
and
hands
suddenly
on it.
I dropped the thing, so I had to do this. And
right. So if that happens, you know, you let go of the pot. That's fine. A better scenario would be leave the cover on the floor, put the pot back, and then you can pick up the you know, pick up the pot cover.
But if I'm.
But if you goof, that's fine.
So can I ask you a question?
Yes, ma'am.
When you made this comment about the cooker that's in the refrigerator, and then if you put it on the left...
So that's the next point. Thank you, Mrs. Krohn. I'm sorry to interrupt, but let's just follow the initiating heating on food and shop. Mrs. Krohn is reading right from the script. That's great.
I haven't turned the page yet.
You're prophetic.
I've got to ask
you. So the example is a Kugel. It's exactly what I have down here. A Kugel, fully cooked Kugel from your fridge. You've got a Kugel. It's potato Kugel. It's noodle Kugel. It's I don't care what kind of Kugel. It's fully cooked. It's sitting in your fridge. It's cold. It's 30 degrees, 35 degrees, whatever it is. Now you don't like cold kugel. You want to warm up your kugel. So, again, issue capital A is going to be cooking. And the solution we'll say right away is it has to be fully cooked. If it's not fully cooked,
right.
Fully cooked solid, I should say. It has to be fully cooked solid because we're not allowed to reheat fully cooked liquid, certainly on a fire. That's a rule we've established before. So a fully cooked solid deals with that problem. It's a fully cooked kugel, which is our example, then capital A falls away. There's no, you can't recook it. It's cooked already.
So A is not really.
So as long as it's in our example, I mean, I picked that example obviously because I want it to come out being permissible. But the solution to A is a fully cooked solid.
Okay.
Now, issue lowercase A is A, actually this is where we addressed this. Lowercase A, if you recall, was reheating a cooked liquid that's cooled. So let's say soup, cold soup, that would not be okay. The solution is it has to be solid. Solution is you can't do it. Okay? So again, issue lowercase A is you're not allowed to reheat a fully cooked cold solid, a cold liquid. So again, the classic example would be chicken soup. And that's why you don't see chicken soup served very often Shabbos lunch. It's either in the crock pot since the night before, or you're having cold chicken soup, which most of us are not going to relish. So a fully cooked cold liquid, the solution is don't. I mean, you can't do it. It's only solids or a hot liquid, which is not you know, we're not talking about hot liquids here. We're talking about something from the fridge. So the solution is no, you just can't do it. Okay, now solution issue double A and lowercase b, which again is a rabbinic decree to avoid cooking and to avoid kindling. Right, the issues repeat themselves again and again. It's the same concern. So again, issue lowercase AA and lowercase B is a rabbinic rule. We don't want you cooking. We don't want you kindling. The solution is the same as it's been all the way through, which is cover the knobs. Cover the knobs. That would be sufficient.
And cover the heat.
Yeah, I think it had to be both actually. Cover the heat and cover the knobs.
I have a question.
It would have to be required in both for both. For this.
Let's say that you are lighting your candles, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't say the bracha yet, and you cut, throw away the whole thing, and you have to put this oil again.
Say that case again.
You have the two candles, right? I light the candles,
mm-hmm.
and I put this, and you cut.
You put the match there, okay.
And you cut, drop the whole thing again. So, oh my God! So you had to put the oil again and the candle and say the bracha. Can you do that?
We're not talking about a dangerous situation. You're only talking about the candles went out and now the mitzvah wasn't finished.
Without say the bracha.
Right. So
if you sneezed and the light went out.
Right.
No, but they just said it was the cat because it was true. That happened
right.
to me. So I put it in.
Missing the word you're saying.
Cat.
The cat put it out.
Knocked over the.
Knocked over.
So if you said a bracha on the. That's a great question.
But the cat sounds while the candles were lit.
Right.
Yeah, it was lit and everything was on the floor in the kitchen. So I had to take everything and put everything clean again.
What you're really asking is the bracha saying the bracha Hashem Ki Tzanav Mitzvah, that bracha accepting Shabbos, or is lighting itself accepting Shabbos?
Yeah.
I have to look into that more. If you've already accepted, then you can't do the mitzvah anymore. It's finished. It's not your fault. There's no fault here.
But you can't
do anything about it.
And one just doesn't stay lit. That's a big deal.
Right. If you lit and said the bracha, that's for sure over. Shabbos has started. You can't touch it. The only question is, if you lit and you didn't say the bracha, I'd have to double check whether you accepted Shabbos or not.
Okay.
But again, once you've accepted Shabbos, you did the mitzvah, you didn't do the mitzvah, it becomes irrelevant.
Right.
It's moot.
Okay.
It's over. It could be 7 o'clock in the afternoon like now, the sun is still in the sky, you can't fix it. Someone else in your house, your husband for example, could light it, and should light it actually, because he hasn't accepted Shabbos yet. Yeah.
Avoid cooking.
I know some people have to cook based on health reasons, so they may not put a lot of salt. The question is, can you add salt to the food if you need to?
You can definitely add to the food. Yes, the only salt rather. The only problem would be on the while it's on the fire.
Okay, no.
You shouldn't do that, but.
Yeah,
not a problem. Not a problem. We discussed before the much bigger issues become other spices which are not cooked. You know, raw this or raw that. We talked about garlic quite a bit. That's a more complicated question. But salt is not an issue because it's cooked. Unless there's some kind of salt I'm not aware of. But the farm side salt, you know, not a problem. Okay, so getting back to the ranch ladies. We're talking here about taking something, again, a kugel out of the fridge. You want to warm it up. It has to be fully cooked. It has to be a solid. The knobs and the heat source that you're, you know, the target has to be covered. And then the most important, in a certain sense, issue again, C really is AAA, just to make you confused again.
Yeah.
And that is, we don't want this to look like cooking. That's the biggest problem. I mean, not the biggest problem, but the most salient problem, the most, you know, issue that we're going to need. We know it has to be fully cooked. I mean, that's kind of a given. The heat source, of course, has to be covered. The biggest challenge here is you can't allow this to look like cooking. So the way to address that, and I split up into solutions one and solution two. It's really, all right, yeah, I mean, that's not wrong. It's just, and that is, we've touched on this before, and that is to put the food on top of another pot. The Gemara says one pot on top of another pot. It doesn't look like cooking. It's too abnormal, too weird, too strange to be considered a cooking process. And that's why I suspect many of us, Shabbos morning, will take the challah, take a kugel, take chicken, take whatever, and put on top of the challah pot. That's perfectly fine. As long as it's a fully cooked, solid, and the knobs are covered. Now that I think about it, we don't cover the heat source, and I need to double check that. That would be perfectly fine because it doesn't look like cooking. No one cooks challah on top of a challah pot. It's just not done. And I mentioned before, if it's a double cooker or whatever, if it's some kind of, you know, gizmo, whatever it is, that is a normal way of cooking, a steamer or whatever, that's usur. That would be forbidden. You can't do that. As long as it's abnormal. Okay, that's solution one. Then solution two, I mentioned, I learned this from my wife, and that is the inverted pan method. The inverted pan method says, again, if the food you're talking about is fully cooked, it's a solid, the knobs are covered, again, I have to double check about the heat source itself being covered, but let's assume that is the case. You need to have the heat source and the knobs covered. So all those first level issues are taken care of. The last issue here is, the AAA issue is, we don't want it to look like cooking. So the inverted pan method says you can flip over a pan, let's say a foil pan, and then put the food on top of that. The reason is the same, because that's not a normal way of cooking. That's a pot. According to this opinion, that's also considered one pot on top of another pot. This is solution number two.
So one is to put it on top of a pot, and the other is to flip over
an empty pot. Yes. The reason I separated those is because not everyone agrees with solution two. As I mentioned the story, we got married, and I said, you can't. And my wife said, let's do the inverted pan. And I said, no way. And I looked into it, and the Chavetz Chaim, the Mishnah Berurah, says, no way. But there's a big, big posek from Israel, from Bnei Brak, who says, yes, it's fine. And I discussed it with some of my Rebbeim, and they said, it's perfectly fine. So my education was, you can't. The pot underneath, according to Chazal, needs to have food in it. And then you can put the secondary food on top. The more lenient opinion says, and you're certainly allowed to follow the more lenient opinion, is the lower pot can be empty as long as it's a pot and it's weird. Again, it creates a scenario
that
which is
obvious,
abnormal. It's obvious this isn't something you do on a Tuesday. Yes, ma'am.
So again, to my sort of cook question. But let's say you got your dinner catered, or you have it yourself, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
You have your food, it was all cooked before Shabbos, and you're saving it for lunch on Shabbos, and it's in the refrigerator. So Saturday morning, before you go to shul, you can heat all of that up on a bless?
Mm-mm. Nope. You must have...
You do it as inverted.
Not if they come to this class, they don't.
Can you do it on the inverted... So you've got one of those electric
hot plates. Okay. So again, Mrs. Crone is just the segue person tonight, and that is the very next point is range tops versus ovens. And in short, the difference between a range top and an oven, we're not going to get into length here, but in short, all this applies to range tops, to the stove top. It does not apply to ovens.
Ovens
you can't use. Right. You can't use. I shouldn't say that. You can't put anything into an oven, a hot oven that's on Shabbos.
Right.
You're certainly entitled to do Roman numeral number one, which I suspect many of us do, is you put the chicken in before Shabbos, you deal with the light, you open the oven door. We'll get into this, I'm not sure if I have a space for this. Not really. You can, forgetting about the oven's function for a second, you can open the door, take the food out and serve it.
Right.
That's fine. You may not return it, and you may not certainly initiate cooking in an oven on Shabbos. Out. Because
if
you can't solve the issues that we need to solve.
If the oven's turned on.
If the oven's on. If the oven's cold, then it's not an oven.
Or if the oven's still warm from the previously being on.
If it's more than yatsa lettuce, though, right? If it's more than 115 degrees. So if it's hot, it's considered an oven. Whether this flame is burning or not is kind of irrelevant. If it's still hot, again, 115, you can't put anything in it. Once it's cooled... You can put anything you want. You can put the dirty dishes, you can put the kugels, you can put the cakes.
We don't know what the temperature is.
Wait.
So but you're putting the challah in to warm it up.
No. Mm-hmm. I mean, it has to be less than 115 degrees. So generally, that's going to be out. So again, you cannot put... Roman numeral number one was simply putting it in Friday afternoon, removing it on Shabbos. That's fine on a range, that's fine in an oven. Again, ignoring the function of the oven for a second. The Roman numeral 2 and 3 was returning or initiating the warming on Shabbos. Ovens are out. All these leniencies that we've discussed of holding it and all that stuff cannot be done in an oven. I'm overstating it, but for all intents and purposes, that's true.
We've already discussed the inverting the pan.
That's right, on serve, on the top.
Right.
That's fine.
So, I mean, but you're talking about what came out of the refrigerator Friday morning. But it wasn't on. Yeah, and it gets averted.
With the inverter on, right.
What about
following all the rules?
At some point, you're gone, and you come back, and
it comes on. You're talking about timer now?
Yeah, from the timer.
I want to address that with under hot plates. But yeah, the initial discussion thus far has nothing to do with timers. The heat source is on, whether it's a stovetop or a hot plate or whatever. It's on since Friday afternoon. With the inverted pan method, fully cooked, solid, blech, and now inverted pan, you can forget what the timer is. You can put that on Shabbos. That's not a problem. But again, on, not in.
Right.
That's the point I want to make right now.
What about the inverted lid?
Say again?
Inverted lid.
Inverted lid, yeah. I mean, again, only on top.
Right.
On the stovetop.
Right. This is a shallot, and I invert the lid. And it's like,
whatever you use has to look weird.
Okay.
I mean, you can't simply take, wait, just to be clear about to go back to the inverted pan issue, you can't simply take one foil pan and put it inside of another foil pan and throw it on the, you call that inverted pan. That doesn't work. It has to look, it has to be inverted. It has to be something that looks weird enough that you wouldn't do it on the regular week. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We took like heavy foil.
Mm-hmm.
And they made like weird shapes out of it.
Uh-huh.
And
like, best like,
yeah,
like leg kind of thing?
Sort of. It's like a looks like sort of like a little cinnamon roll thing.
Mm-hmm.
Flat. And you can put something on top of that and that's okay.
Right. You're talking about initiating the cocoa from the fridge.
It is violating creating.
No, she's saying it's done before.
Mm.
The coils are done before.
I'm not sure that's a violation of creating, but
something like this.
Right.
It's like in heavy foil.
That's so cute. Yeah. You can sell these and make millions. I would assume that's true, as long as it's clear that that's weird.
Right.
You know, like it's an inch thick. You know, it's something significant.
It's like you make these.
Yeah.
That's a cute idea.
Coil.
I don't see why not. Yeah. Okay. Now, not all hot plates. Well, let me skip to the bottom. Maybe additional notes, ladies. I do want to touch on ovens here. Without getting into all the gory details, there are certainly two approaches to ovens on Shabbos. Again, I'm not talking here about the light. The light has been mitigated one way or the other. It's either always on or always off.
Right.
Those are your two choices. It obviously cannot be going on and off as you open and close doors. So that's just as a given, as a get-go, either always on or always off. Now, the bigger issue with ovens, ladies, is the oven has a thermostat. The thermostat will kick on when you open that oven door. The oven is a relatively small area. The difference in the temperature between the oven, even at 200, and your kitchen is significant. And therefore, the likelihood of that oven kicking on is great. It's going to happen. The cold air rushes in, the hot air rushes out. It's obviously going to kick on. So there's two basic approaches to this issue. The more stringent approach says you can only open the oven to get the chicken out. We're talking an oven that's on, meaning it's in the on position. And now there's a thermostat. We're not talking about, we touched earlier on a Shabbos mode. Let's ignore that for now. Some of a regular old-fashioned oven. So the only way you're allowed to open that oven door, if the oven is in on, some 200, 300, whatever, according to the stricter opinion, is if the flame is actually burning. The flame, the gas, the electricity, whatever it is actually burning. According to the stricter opinion, you can only open that oven door if it's actually burning, because then you're opening the door and allowing this transfer of heat, and all you're doing really is maintaining the status quo. I touched on this months ago. So either noise if it's gas, or the light that's on, very often they'll have a light that goes on if it's actually active right now. The more stringent opinion would say you'd have to have some way of figuring this out, because you can't open it unless it's actually burning. The thinking being, you're opening it, is definitely going to turn on, it's going to activate the thermostat, which is going to then activate the heat source, and now you're indirectly causing the heating to go on. You're basically stoking the fire. Exactly. That's a more stringent opinion. The less stringent opinion, which is espoused by none other than Ramosha Feinstein, who was the leading halachic authority of America until his passing in 86, he says, nothing to worry about. Because, again, we're not talking about fancy lights going on and LEDs and bleeping and blapping. We're not talking about any of that. We're simply talking about a regular oven. The light has been dealt with one way or the other. You're now opening the door. 5 seconds, 8 seconds, 20 seconds later, the thermostat will kick on, the heat source will go on. For Moshe writes, that's fine, believe it or not. Because you're not, again, all the legal gory details, but if you remember back to the concept of psikresha, which means if you do act A, permissible, act B will definitely happen. The classic case we said was opening your refrigerator door and the light goes on. That's a psikresha. That's A, I want my orange juice, I open the door, will definitely lead to bulb going on. That's prohibited. You're not allowed to do that. Because A definitely leads to B. Well, Rav Moshe writes, that's only a problem because they're immediate. One directly leads to the next. There's no thermostat, there's no discussion, there's no time lapse, there's no nothing. One directly, the opening of the fridge does two things. It allows access to orange juice, and it turns on the light. Can't do it.
But you can get your, there's no about it. Getting your orange juice.
As long as the light's out. Right. If you know the light's on, you can't, you know, sorry. Can't drink your orange juice, so you have to get a non-Jew, whatever it is. But the oven, he argues, is different. The oven is not you opening the oven, which then turns on the fire. It's you opening the oven, which then allows the cold air in, which then will trip the thermostat, which then will trip the gas. That's not a problem, Rav Moshe writes. And I will tell you, I remember reading this or hearing about Rav Moshe's leniency, and couldn't believe it. And again, I discussed this with Rabbi Kushkuman, and he tells people that all the time. So that is certainly a not just legitimate. I mean, again, Rav Moshe Feinstein was the postdoc of America. One is allowed to do that. One is allowed to open the oven door, to remove the chicken, to remove the kugel, to remove the whatever, as long as nothing is happening as an immediate cause and effect of your opening the oven. You don't have to rush to close it. None of that stuff. The fact that it goes on is irrelevant. As bizarre maybe as that sounds to the Shabbos observant Jew, I cause the heat to go on. I mean, that's a fire. It's right. Not even a light bulb. It's a real fire.
Right.
That's Havara in the Torah. No, that's perfectly fine because you didn't intend it. You didn't. Now, there is discussion about removing all the food at that point because I'm not sure Moshe would require that or not. I'd have to look into that further. But certainly many will tell you that at that point you really should remove. Certainly if it's not fully cooked, you have to remove it all. But even if it is, I suspect there are those who say remove all of it at that point. Yes, ma'am.
If I can remember. I said that not facetiously. I'm already forgetting. I swear. Why are you? Okay.
I would tell the girls to write it down.
The second part of it was, maybe I'll remember the first part, the ice maker.
Yeah.
Oh, I know what the first part was. Came back. The first part is, if you leave your oven on and don't open it, doesn't it still cycle in and out?
Sure does. But you have nothing to do with it.
Well, but you left your oven on.
So? You left your lights on. I mean, lights are cycling all the time. I mean, electricity is flowing. That's an on. I realize it's different. One's a thermostat, one's not.
Stop and go, stop and go.
Right. Your air conditioning is a thermostat. I mean, all these things are irrelevant. You're not. The only time something is prohibited on Shabbos is if you're interacting with it on Shabbos. Then we've got
okay,
a question.
So the ice maker. Should you turn your ice maker off on Shabbos?
Oh, so we mentioned this also earlier, and then we said that if a person is not pulling the you're not allowed to take the cubes of ice. If right now it's off, the arm is up, you're not allowed to remove the ice that will then for sure cause the arm to go down.
What if it doesn't have an arm? It has some other way of.
I guess it would depend on what technology is being used. Certainly a motion sensor or something like that would be a problem. I don't know what other technologies
are in place. I don't think the new one has an arm.
All right. So you have to go back and study your...
Setting the light to the freezer and flipping the switch so it's off.
Yeah, so, again, you'd have to figure out what the technology, the light for sure, but the technology of the mechanism for the ice maker is a separate question. I don't know what the technology is. If it's simply that arm, which rises and falls with the production of the ice, if it's down, then you're not doing anything at all. You're just removing ice. If it's up, you're allowed to take ice out as long as what you take out will not for sure lower that arm. If it happens to fall later, that's just where Moshe Feinstein's the same ruling. If it happens to fall later, that's not your problem. Not yet, not your issue. Okay.
Not all hot plates are created.
Not all hot plates are created equal. Let's touch on this very quickly. If you have to go, I understand. But let me just try and get this out. And that is, we also discussed this already, a little bit out of order. But there's three kinds of hot plates in essence. The number one is, ladies, there is no dials and it doesn't get very hot, meaning it does not get above 115. You'll only find this in Eichler's.com or other from stores, because why in the world would a non-Jew want such a thing? It's a hot plate. You plug it in the wall. It gets to 100 degrees. Its goal is simply to remove the frigidness of the refrigerator. You take the Kugel out. You put it on at 11 o'clock. By 1 o'clock, it's 100 degrees. Right. It's basically room temperature. It will not get to that level of the Atzeletus bowl, the 115 that we've discussed. That's fine. There's no issues, no rules, no regs. You just can't plug it in. It's obvious to all of us. It's plugged in before Shabbos. You have a timer. You don't have a timer. It's irrelevant. You can put anything you want. You can put chicken soup if you want. You can put anything you want, because under 115, it's not a fire. It's not a heat source. It's just not.
Timers were only okay for light.
Say again?
I thought you said timers were only.
Oh, good question. So that really depends on. Remind me that at the end. We'll talk about that. That's a great question. And what was the other one about? The other question, remind me at the end. Oh, it's McDonald's.
Yeah.
Okay. Number two, ladies, is it has no dial, but it does get over 115. Much more common animal. It'll get to 400 degrees, but there's no dial. Or 200 is probably more likely. It's 50. It's not going to get to 400, which is cooking temperature, but it'll get to 200, 250. So it's over that threshold of what we call fire, what we call heat, the 115. But there's no dial.
Right.
The advantage of not having the dial is there's nothing to cover.
Right.
There's nothing to cover. But then the rules of inverted pan do in fact apply, because taking the Kugel out of the fridge and putting it on a 200 degree hot plate does halachically look like cooking. You and I wouldn't use this to cook, but that's once you go past the 115 threshold, that's a fire. It's either yes a fire or no a fire.
Okay.
So once it's a fire, you can't initiate a warming process on Shabbos. So here, ladies, it would have to be fully cooked. It would have to be a solid.
Right.
The only leniency really is you don't have to cover the knobs, because there's no knobs to cover. They're covered already, so to speak. And as I've said before, we're not concerned about unplugging or plugging in. That's just a non-issue.
Right.
It's a non-issue. We are concerned you'll dial it up, you'll dial it down. So once the dial is removed, the only concern then would be to use an inverted pan. Yep. Okay, and then probably the most common of them all, the Walmart version, is it has a dial and it gets over, you know, it gets to 200, 300, 400 degrees. We certainly have one of those at home. That is your regular fire. That's just like your stovetop. All of the rules enumerated above would have to be followed. So if you are going to warm something up on your hot plate on Shabbos, you would have to be fully cooked, solid. The knobs would certainly have to be covered, and you'd have to use the inverted pan. It's the exact same thing as a burner on the stovetop, just because it's more convenient and stuck on the wall is irrelevant. You have to follow all the rules. Okay, so I've got three more issues real quick, and that is timers. Timers were Moshe Feinstein issued a ruling in the 60s. He doesn't want people using timers on Shabbos, meaning setting them Friday to go on and off on Shabbos, except for lights. He issued that ruling because he did not want Shabbos to degenerate into, well, I'll just put everything on a timer. I mean, think about it. Now, fast forward 50 years, you can have an electric car on a timer.
Right.
And have the door swing open, and you hop in, and it just keeps going, right? You could do that. Robots, and have your floor clean. And I mean, it's amazing, but you could do it if you really wanted to. So you can have your wall, you know, if you're Bill Gates, your walls will change colors on a timer. I mean, everything. So Rav Moshe Feinstein issued that ruling. It's a very interesting ruling, because it's almost like a new decree. And it certainly is cited and quoted and referred to regularly. At the same time, we don't, most of us, I don't know who we is, but we generally don't follow it as strictly as he intended. We're generally more lenient than Rav Moshe would have liked. Meaning, you certainly do see timers on air conditioning units. You do see timers on hot plates. A crock pot, for example. You know, there's plenty of folks who put a timer on a crock pot, and they'll have the crock pot go off at 2 o'clock, so it's not on the rest of Shabbos, for example. Or the air conditioning units that she'll have in the garage. So we do take it a little further than he wished. You know, he's not the Sanhedrin. It's not like we must follow him and that's, you know, the be all and end all. But again, we definitely consider his. We don't want what he was concerned about. We don't want Shabbos to degenerate into everything possible going on because it's, you know, it was set before. I mean, literally, there's apps these days on smartphones. TV. You can wire your entire, yeah, TV's going on, your coffee maker's going on, the whole place is going on, and you didn't touch it. We don't want that. We don't want that. It's technically legal, but it destroys Shabbos.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fine.
And it stays on, and then it goes on.
Dawn to dusk. That's fine.
Dawn, okay.
Dusk to dawn, rather. That's fine. Totally fine.
What about music?
Yeah, music would be out. That'd be a great example. Out.
Did you forget to turn it off, and all night long you're going to hear?
Yeah, it's on. You won't do it again. Okay. Really quickly, ladies, one more point, and then we can all go, and that is the issue of Hatmana, which we really have not touched on. That is wrapping things on Shabbos. The thing was raised last week. In short, the rabbis did say one is not allowed to wrap something to insulate it on Shabbos, talking about an urn, talking about a pot, etc. If it's still on the heat source, right? We discussed last time. If it's a bowl and you're covering it until someone gets there, that's totally fine. But if it's on the heat source, one is not allowed to wrap it. Wrapping means a towel, a blanket, something like that.
On the heat source?
Well, let's say on a hot plate. Black cover, that type of thing, exactly. I think you raised the black cover. So wrapping that, ladies, but wrapping is only prohibited if it's fully wrapped, and that gets to the rock, which I don't want to get into in the detail right now, but wrapping something well, meaning wrapped for all four sides or all five sides, whatever, in a blanket, let's say, while it's on the hot plate, even if you set it up before Shabbos, is out. The way around that is simply wrap it loosely. If you drape it on top and the sides are not covered, that's fine. Or an urn. You'll see urn covers sometimes. If it's half an urn cover, that's perfectly fine. So wrapping, there's a lot of discussion about this, but for our purposes, the main issue is going to be a blanket on an urn or something like that, on a hot plate. Again, as long as it's loose, that's perfectly fine. And I should say also, you can't start that on Shabbos either. You can start that on Friday and leave it warming on Shabbos. You can rewrap it on Shabbos. You can't wrap it initially on Shabbos.
Okay, so
I'm out of breath.
So you've got a pot.
Thank you, ladies. Yes, ma'am.
You've cooked soup before Shabbos. You turn off the fire source.
Yeah.
You can't wrap that soup in a towel?
You could wrap that before Shabbos. I don't want to get into all the grays, but you could wrap that up before Shabbos starts.
Tightly.
If the heat source is gone,
you
can now wrap before Shabbos,
to keep the heat in
with a regular towel. That's can't start using whatever is modern is best, you know, nothing fancy that will add heat, so to speak. But if it's just a blanket and the heat source is off before Shabbos, you can wrap it before Shabbos, yes.
Okay, can you then put it back on after Shabbos, while it's Shabbos, like you took some soup?
You take some soup out and then rewrap it, yes.
Okay, and now McDonald's and QT.
Yeah. Yes, okay, so Moshe Feinstein is a famous truth. The question is, why can you walk into QT where plenty of folks are walking out with hamburgers? Hot dogs, rather. That's a big...
All that
stuff they have there. I see you guys walking in for breakfast. I'm getting a coffee and they're getting a hot dog. I don't get it. But, okay, so the difference is, for Moshe Feinstein in a landmark tshuva, I'll maybe tell you the story of the tshuva later, but basically he ruled that anything which, if the norm of this activity involves a prohibition, that's marasayin. That's the prohibition of doing something which is suspect. If the norm of this activity doesn't necessarily require a prohibited activity, then that's not marasayin. So going into QT, the vast, you know, a significant number of people who walk in those doors are not doing anything halachically prohibited for a Jew. They're paying for gas. They're getting a coffee. They're getting Hershey's. The vast majority of the stuff in there is not problematic. By a QT gas station, the vast majority of people who open those doors are not violating something a Jew cannot do. Whereas the vast majority of people who walk into McDonald's are doing something that a Jew cannot do. Right. It's a very small percent that are only getting a Coke. It's a very small percent in the old days that are only using the phone or using the bathroom. Remember pay phones? It's a very small majority, a very small percent. So that's where we draw, and that's where it gets very confusing with Chuck E. Cheese, and can you go play the arcade, and that kind of stuff.
So it's really prohibited to stop at a McDonald's on a long trip to use the bathroom?
Unless it's an emergency, yes.
Right.
Yes.
So then where do you can go to
gas station.
Or a gas station. Yeah. You can,
right.
yeah.
Can
get one of those keys and walk around the back and be right. grossed out and not go anywhere.
Right.
Yes. That's, yeah. That's a problem.
When are we getting back? You don't
have
to go.
What's that?
When are we getting back? What is that?
Well, to get this year, we will. Good question. Okay, so Mrs. Druckmann is asking about continuing. Thank you for raising that question.
Some of us are going through withdrawal here.
Yeah. Okay, ladies. So first of all, I want to thank you and compliment everyone here for sticking with it. Mrs. Cronin, you're talking in class. I appreciate all of you, Hashem, not me, you know, Hashem himself appreciates all of us the fact that we stuck to it and we carried it through, and this is class 17 or 18 or whatever it is. Thank God we did accomplish quite a bit. We did all of Muktzah, we did the introduction to Hilchos Shabbos, and then we did the first order, 1 through 11. My goal certainly, I hope, would be to pick up where we left off with Malacha number 12 next year in Yerushalayim. If it's not in Yerushalayim, I suspect it'll be right here. But I would very much like to continue that.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.